Now, a video titled Why Bar Staff Will Not Serve Afghanistan Veteran is one of the most watched on the BBC website today. The former Royal Marine Tom Birch spoke to domestic BBC outlet Five Live about his serious brain injury in 2006 whilst he was serving in Afghanistan. The injury has left him with slurred speech, and as a result, he finds getting served in bars difficult because staff often think that he's drunk. Well, he discusses Headway Charity's campaign to introduce medical cards explaining his injury. Let's speak to Amy Zellner, who is in Minnesota in the US, and Phil Quinlan, who is from Ireland, to talk about what it's like to live with a brain injury. Welcome both of you to the programme and thank you for speaking to us.
Thanks, Chloe.
Hi, Chloe.
Hi, Phil. First of all, explain to us how you got your brain injury.
I was 15 and I was playing football in a local game, under 16 level, and through a clash of heads going to head the ball, my skull was fractured, which formed a blood clot, and I was rushed to hospital, and the blood clot was removed. I spent 10 days in a coma and woke up over a period of about 6 weeks very, very gradually to realize my whole right side was paralyzed and I couldn't walk, obviously talk or eat. So it was just like being a baby again.
So life changing literally in a split second.
That was it, yeah, exactly. So the next few years were I had to practice lots of physiotherapy and rehab and all that to try and get some sort of semblance back into walking or wobbling around the world. And then when I left school, I took it upon myself to travel the world and just... I needed that sense of independence after my parents had wrapped me in cotton wool, understandably enough. And it was breathtaking to be so independent all around the world. And then I came home to roost about 15 years ago, met my wife, had two beautiful kids, and basically that's where I am at the moment.
Before we talk about the challenges or otherwise you have living with your brain injury, I want to get Amy's story because although completely different, once again, it was a split second that changed your life.
Yes, I was walking down my driveway and I hit a patch of black ice and I had zero warning and my body didn't even brace the fall and I landed directly on the back of my skull. They think I was probably blacked out for a minute or two. And when I got up, I knew I wasn't okay. I was having visual problems. My head had excruciating pain and I was having trouble walking. I was kind of like stumbling. My balance was really off. My coordination was off. I couldn't read. I tried to pull up Google to find out where the local ER was, and I couldn't even read the monitor. It was really, really frightening not knowing what was going on with me.
And so how does it affect you today in your daily life, that injury?
I struggle with a lot of neurofatigue, doing the simplest tasks like carrying in the groceries, carrying my laundry upstairs. It simply wears me out. And I sometimes struggle with finding the right word. It's called aphasia. And I struggle with finding the word or comprehending a word that someone's saying to me. And I still deal with some dizzy imbalance issues as well. Those would be my prominent ones.
Phil, are there similarities for you?
Absolutely. I can totally relate to the fatigue because every tiny little journey really tires me out. My biggest issue, I'd have to say, would be the balance. Because I have spasticity in my right leg and my right arm, I find it hard to drag my leg along and try to counterbalance that. You're always trying to counterbalance and always trying to, reassert yourself and try and stay upright, really. So it's a constant challenge to try and walk any distance at all. So anything involved, like if there's wind out, that's a killer. If there's ice, I'm sorry to mention that, Amy. If there's ice out, it's a no-go for me because my balance is just incredibly poor.
Yeah, it's challenging, isn't it? I mean, that whole balance thing, like, you don't realize how much energy it takes to keep your body upright.
Yes. Like, I used to take for granted when I was playing football and when I was fully able-bodied, but now it's trying to describe it to people. That's the biggest issue. It takes so much of an effort to stay upright.
Yeah, and every little task is just so exhausting. You know, I know people who, you know, I didn't shower for days on end because taking a shower and washing my hair was exhausting.
Yeah. Well, I have a shaven head, so that doesn't bother me at all. But I can say the tiniest and the menialest of tasks are very tiring. Simple things like walking to the shop from the car. Every journey has to be planned. If there's no parking, I'm snookered. I tell the kids, if there's parking, we can go in. If there's no parking, we can't. And the kids are beginning to learn that I have certain balance issues, and they know not to tug at me or run at me unless I'm balanced against a wall or something sturdy like that. But
do you also find, Phil, when you go out to like a shopping mall or you go out to eat, that overstimulation, all the lights and the sounds and other people talking, does that totally wear you out too?
It used to when I was a late teenager, going to nightclubs and all that. It really, really did. It blurred vision and all that. So I just sort of stopped, and I realized that nightclubs weren't for me because I'm awake at 6:30 most mornings, and come 6:30 in the evening, I'm just exhausted. And thank God my kids are brilliant sleepers. They go to sleep at 7:00 and sleep for maybe 11, 12 hours.
Oh, Phil, can I
have them?
You're
lucky.
Yeah, you're very lucky. I wanted to ask you about your kids, because am I right, they're 3 and 6?
3 and 6, yeah. Eileen is 6 and Joe is 3.
I mean, that's an exhausting age anyway for any parent, but the challenges that you have, it must be incredibly difficult just to run after them.
Well, or wobble after them, yeah.
But you get my point, though, don't you? Because I bet your 3-year-old just legs it sometimes, and that's hard for you.
Exactly. Well, my biggest fear is that I can't catch them if they're going to do something damaging to themselves. So my dad has always said, you can't preempt absolutely everything. So just try and, you know, make the issues as less as possible. Joe is of an age now that he climbs, he runs. He's a typical boy. And Eileen is she's a bit older. She's 6 and she's fantastic as well. She's into her Lego, which is very handy for me because I can sit and play with her.
I just wonder, both of you, how you find people are towards you, because this video that's been watched so many times on the BBC website is from this former army veteran who says that because of his slurred speech, people will refuse to serve him alcohol in bars because they think he's drunk.
Well, I can agree totally with that. It's happened to me twice in Dublin. You're walking up to watch a football match on the telly, and you go in, you order a drink, a non-alcoholic drink as it was in my time, and I've been told, sorry, you've had enough, could you please leave? So I'm disabled, I'm not drunk, and they sort of, you startle the barman an awful lot, but there's other people that just don't listen, and you're drunk.
Yeah.
So it's ignorance, you know, that's all. A lot of people need educating on the...
Absolutely.
That's what I find is going to help, the education area. What about yourself, Amy?
I find I can walk and talk and I look fine. And so a lot of times people assume that I'm totally fine. I've had people come up to me and they're like, oh, you must be fully recovered. You look great. And it's like... I need to go take a nap right now. The invisibleness of it. Yeah.
Yeah, well, if I'm standing or sitting, everyone thinks I'm fine. Once I start to walk, I put so much effort into walking with my limp that people just naturally assume I'm drunk. But that's because I don't have a walking aid. And whenever I have a crutch with me, the outlook is totally different. That's the amazing thing.
Right. People will open doors for you and help you, offer to carry something for you if you have a cane or a crutch.
Absolutely, yeah. And when you're on a mobility scooter, kids normally just see you. Their parents just notice you. You know, don't be staring. But let the kid stare. Let the kid come up and ask why I'm on a mobility scooter, why I'm walking with a crutch, why I walk with a limp, all that. You know, let the kids ask, because that's how you nurture education, really. I know.
I had considered, like, getting a cane just because it was so challenging to go to the grocery store and carry my groceries to my car. And, I mean, it was just exhausting.
I just
wanted someone to help me, you know?
Well, do you ask for help a lot, Amy?
I've learned that I need to ask for help. That has been my lesson in all of this, yes.
Yeah, you must ask. Don't be too proud.
Mm-hmm. Listen, Amy and Phil, I'm so grateful to you for speaking to us and giving us a real insight into your life, the challenges, the fabulous moments as well, and for speaking so honestly. So thank you so much for speaking to us on OS. That's Amy Zelmer, it's a pleasure. And Phil Quinlan, he's from Ireland, she is from Minnesota.